trying to decide exactly a lesson that went well with this morning's lesson, or this evening's lesson. And decided that I wanted to talk about some concepts that basically atheists try to attack Christianity with. There are some stories in the Bible that cause people some concern. They cause people grief because the object of the story or the basis of it are things that we don't find very comfortable to talk about. One of the ones that oftentimes concern people is the sacrifice of Isaac. Because at his root, we have God asking for a human sacrifice. And that causes concern because God, the Bible is very, very clear about God's opinion about human sacrifice. If you go all the way back to Genesis chapter 9, in Genesis chapter 9, and in verse 5, Genesis chapter 9 and verse 5, God says, "Surely I will require your lifeblood from every beast, I will require it, and from every man. From every man's brother, I will require the life of man." Humans killing humans is not allowed. Now, there are some exceptions to the rules. So you have the death penalty as far as involved in murder and things like that. But God doesn't appreciate somebody taking life from man. One of the aspects of false religions that were done in the days of Israel was that false gods were often sacrificed to, and they were offered up human beings as part of the sacrifices. But that wasn't true God's worship. It was vastly different. In Deuteronomy chapter 12, and in verse 29, Deuteronomy chapter 12, starting with verse 29, says, "When the Lord your God cuts off from before you the nations which you are going to dispossess, and you dispossess them and dwell in their land, beware that you are not ensnared to follow them after they are destroyed before you. And do not inquire after their gods, saying, 'How do these nations serve their gods, that I may do likewise?' You shall not behave thus toward the Lord your God. For every abominable act which the Lord hates, they have done for their gods. For they have even burnt their sons and daughters in the fire to their gods." God is very clear. I don't want you doing anything like the Canaanites. This is one of the reasons why they were driven out of the land. We'll talk about that more tonight. But for anyone to offer human sacrifice, God says that would profane his name. That would just pollute the name of God. In Leviticus chapter 18, Leviticus 18 and verse 21, Leviticus 18, 21, it says, "And you shall not give any of your offspring to offer them to Molech, nor shall you profane the name of your God. I am the Lord." Molech was the one that was worshipped by offering children up as sacrifices into the fire. God says, "You're not going to do anything like that. You're not going to profane my name." And later on, when those false religions did creep into Israel's beliefs and their practices, in Jeremiah chapter 7, God then tells the people, "You know, I never even thought of this. This would never even entered my mind to do such things." In Jeremiah 7 and verse 31, Jeremiah 7 verse 31, "They have built high places in Topheth, which is the valley of the sons of Hinnom, to burn their sons and their daughters in fire, which I did not command, and it did not come into my mind. I didn't say it to do this. I didn't even think about it. But they did it anyway. Later on in Jeremiah chapter 32, Jeremiah 32 and verse 35, so they built the high places of Baal, which are in the valley of Ben-Hinnom, to cause their sons and their daughters to pass through the fire to Molech, which I did not command, nor had it enter my mind that they should do this abomination to cause Judah to sin. Which then brings the question of how do we handle what Moses or what Abraham was told, as recorded for us by Moses. God says he doesn't like human sacrifice. He doesn't even think about it. He doesn't want it. He finds it despicable. And yet, when we go back to the story that's in Genesis chapter 22, and starting with verse 1, we had that in our scripture reading. I won't read the whole thing over again. But in Genesis chapter 1, or 22, starting with verse 1, it says, now it came about after these things that God tested Abraham and said to him, Abraham, and he said, here I am. And he said, now take your son, your only son whom you love, Isaac, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of your mountains, which I will tell you. So God very plainly says, I want you to offer your son, Isaac, as a burnt offering. Now we're told why. We're told that this was a test of Abraham. But at the same time, why did God ask for this? See, Abraham was asked to offer up his only son. This was a child Abraham had waited 25 years for during his old age. Isaac was not born until Abraham was 100 years old. This was a child that basically when Abraham had left his homeland, God had hinted at that he was going to make great nations out of him. And it was through this child. And it was through this child that God promised to bring up blessings upon Abraham. Hold your fingers here and go back to Genesis chapter 17. Genesis 17 and in verse 19. Genesis chapter 17, verse 19. But God said, no, but Sarah, your wife, will bear you a son, and you shall call his name Isaac, and I'll establish my covenant with him for an everlasting covenant for his descendants after him. Well, Isaac hasn't married yet. Isaac's still basically a child. So we don't know exactly how old he was. Some guess he was probably about 17 years old about this time. Isaac doesn't have any children, and God's asking Abraham to offer up Isaac to him as a burnt offering. So there's contradictions in God's command. The child is to die before he has children. Yet this child's children would be establishing up as a part of an everlasting covenant. And we got the problem, God abhors human sacrifices, yet he's asking Abraham to perform one. What we should note is that the fact that those contradictions exist says that there's something more than what's obviously on the surface. There's something deeper here. Later on, we as Christians are told how Abraham had resolved this conflict in his mind. In Hebrews chapter 11, starting with verse 17, Hebrews 11, starting with verse 17. So by faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he had received the promises, was offering up his only begotten son. It was he to whom it was said, in Isaac your descendants shall be called. He considered that God is able to raise people even from the dead, from whom he had received them back as a type. So here's how Abraham basically resolved it. He figured, well, God promised that Isaac was going to have descendants. Can't have descendants when you're dead, so therefore God must be planning to raise Isaac back up. And that's how he resolved it in his own mind, and that's why he was willing to do so. But what we see here is Abraham demonstrating great faith. He trusted God even when God seemed to conflict with his own statements. God wasn't conflicting. But Abraham was able to hold on to faith even when he thought he had contradictory evidence. See, that's something most of us can't do. That's why we talk about Abraham being the father of faith. Most of us, if we start seeing something that even leastwise contradicts what we already think, we immediately almost quickly toss up our faith. Abraham didn't. It wasn't a blind faith. It was one that was well reasoned. He thought it through. He thought of a way that it might happen. He didn't get it right, but that doesn't matter. It's based on what he thought could happen and how God is consistent with himself. Abraham believed that he would return with Isaac, even as he walked up that mountain. So there's a little subtlety that's in Genesis 22, if you go back to that again. Genesis 22 and in verse 5. Very easy to overlook this. But look at verse 5 in Genesis 22. And Abraham said to his young men, "Stay here with the donkey, and I and the lad will go over there, and we will worship and return to you." Now, do you notice what he said? Abraham knows he was told to offer up Isaac as a burnt offering. He tells the young men that traveled with him, "Stay here. We're going to go offer to God, and we are going to come back." However this is going to end up, Abraham was positive that Isaac was going to accompany him when he returned. And what we find actually in truth, and the reason for all of this, is that there is foreshadowing going on that tells us about God's only son being offered up. You see, Isaac was called a lamb. Take a look at chapter 22, verse 7. Isaac spoke to Abraham, his father, and said, "My father?" And he said, "Here I am, my son." And he said, "Behold the wood, the fire, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering?" And Abraham said, "God will provide for himself the lamb for the burnt offering, my son." So the two of them walked on together. Abraham had in mind, well, God had said that Isaac was going to be the offering. Where is the lamb? Well, God's going to provide it. Isaac was seen as the lamb, at least in Abraham's view, for that offering. In John chapter 1, John chapter 1 and verse 36, John chapter 1, verse 36. When John saw Jesus, he says, and looked at Jesus as he walked, and said, "Behold the Lamb of God." That statement is the one who's being sacrificed to God by that statement. And later on, Peter talks about it in 1 Peter chapter 1 and verse 18. First Peter chapter 1 and in verse 18. knowing that you were not redeemed with perishable things, like silver or gold from your futile way of life, inherited from your forefathers, but with precious blood as of a lamb unblemished and spotless, the blood of Christ. We were saved by the blood of the Lamb. There's foreshadowing going on between what happened to Isaac and what happened to Jesus. There's another one also. See, Isaac had to carry his own wood. Again, go back to Genesis 22. If you haven't figured out, you probably need a bookmarker there. It will help. Genesis 22. And in verse 6, it says, "And Abraham took hold of the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac his son, and he took in his hand the fire and the knife." So the two of them walked on together. Isaac had to carry his own wood for the sacrifice that he was going to be offered on to the place where he was going to be sacrificed. Again, there's a foreshadowing of something that happened in the New Testament, because in John chapter 19, John chapter 19, and in verse 17, John 19, verse 17, "They took Jesus, therefore, and he went out, bearing his own cross to the place called the place of the skull, which is in Hebrew, Golgotha." Jesus carried his own cross for his sacrifice as well. Another point also is that they traveled 3 days to that place of sacrifice. And that can be a point to think about for a while too. Because why did God ask Abraham to go so far? Why not pick some place nearby? Why did he have to travel 3 days? Well, some see that as a part of the test of Abraham's faith. Abraham had 3 days to think about what was going on and to change his mind. But I think there's also something much more going on in here as well. Because the place they went to was a mountain in the land of Moriah. And later on, Abraham gives it the name Yahweh Yireh, which means the Lord will provide. Moriah is only mentioned one other place in the Bible. It's a mountain where the temple was built. Take a look at 2 Chronicles chapter 3. And in verse 2. I'm going to start with verse 1. "Then Solomon began to build the house of the Lord in Jerusalem on Mount Moriah, where the Lord had appeared to his father David at the time that David had prepared on the threshing floor for Ornan the Jebusite. And he began to build on the second day of the second month of the fourth year of his reign." Solomon built the temple on Mount Moriah. When Jesus was sacrificed, they went outside the gates of the city which has the temple, and basically Jesus died, because it's on one mountain, on Mount Moriah. So in other words, the reason why he had to travel 3 days was to travel to this place where God was going to sacrifice his son in the future. Now, if you think about some of the subtleties here, all the little tiny interplays that are going on. How many people could write a book like that? How many people could make events happen like that across almost 3,000 years of time? and have all these little subtleties being interplayed. See, Abraham's, in a sense, sacrifice began the day he left home. The day he left home, he gave up Isaac to God. He had decided that Isaac was going to be sacrificed. So for 3 days, even before he placed Isaac on the altar, he had already given up Isaac. And God then halted the sacrifice and restored his son to him. Jesus, too, was gone for 3 days before God brought him back to life in the resurrection. See, there's so much here more than we first noticed. A story is being played out in advance of a real story. It's not just arbitrarily that God's saying, hey, I want a human sacrifice, and contradicting himself. He's talking about playing out a role play of something he himself was going to do in the future, as well as testing Abraham's faith right at the time. See, when God asked for Isaac as a burnt offering, but he also didn't actually require his actual death. Later on in the Law of Moses, and this is something a lot of people don't understand, in Leviticus chapter 1 and in verse 4, Leviticus 1 verse 4, he shall lay his hand on the head of the burnt offering that it may be accepted for him to make atonement on his behalf. There were a lot of different types of offerings in the Old Testament. But one of the things the burnt offering was done was for atonement of sin. There were sin offerings. There were guilt offerings. When a person sinned on purpose, he had to offer one. If he did it accidentally, he was supposed to offer the other. But there was also a voluntary offering called the burnt offering that was given for atonement of sin. That offering was called a soothing aroma to God. In fact, take a look at verse 17 of Leviticus chapter 1. Then he shall tear his wings, and he shall never, but shall never sever it. The priest shall offer it up in smoke on the altar on the wood, which is on the fire. It is a burnt offering, an offering of fire, a soothing aroma to the Lord. Of course, being a burnt offering, it would bring up smoke. But the imagery that's supposed to be portrayed is that this aroma would turn away God's wrath. It would soothe God's wrath. Burnt offerings were also called whole offerings in Deuteronomy 33. Deuteronomy 33, and in verse 10, Deuteronomy 33, verse 10. They shall teach you your ordinances to Jacob, your laws to Israel. They shall put incense before you and whole burnt offerings on your altar. Burnt offerings were also called whole offerings because you didn't give part of it. You gave it all. You gave it completely. You could not give it back. And you couldn't profit from it either. Because everything was given to God and you didn't get anything back from it, so therefore it was gone. It was given completely over to the Lord. When Abraham was asked to offer up Isaac as a burnt offering, what he was basically asked is to give him completely over to the Lord. Wholly. Totally. To place him in God's hand. And because Abraham gave over his son, God found that to be an acceptable offering. Take a look at Genesis 22. Genesis 22 and in verse 16. Well, start with verse 15. And then the Lord, angel of the Lord called Abraham a second time from heaven and said, "By myself I have sworn, declares the Lord, because you have done this thing and have not withheld your son, your only son, indeed I will greatly bless you and I will greatly multiply your seed as the stars of the heaven and as the sands of the seashore. And your seed shall possess the gates of their enemies. In your seed all the nations of the earth shall be blessed, because you have obeyed my voice." God was well pleased that Abraham was willing to give his son totally over to God. And that's part of that's what the concept of a burnt offering is. And what we see is a foreshadow of God's own offering of his son. See, Jesus, and most of us understand this, Jesus' offering was for sin. In Hebrews chapter 9, and in verse 24, it says, "For Christ did not enter the holy place made with hands, a mere copy of the true one, but into heavenly places, into heaven itself, now to appear in the presence of God for us. Nor was it that he offered himself often, as a high priest enters the holy place year by year, with blood that's not his own. Otherwise, he would have need to suffer often since the foundation of the world. But now, once at the consummation of the ages, he has been made manifest to put away sin by the sacrifice of himself. And as much as it is appointed to men to die once, and after this comes judgment, so Christ also, having been offered once to bear the sins of many, will appear a second time for salvation, without reference to sin, to those who eagerly await him. For by the law, since it is only a shadow of the good things to come, and not the very form of things, can never by the same sacrifices which they offer continually, year by year, make perfect those who draw near. Otherwise they would not have to have ceased to be offered, because the worshippers, having once been cleansed, would no longer have had consciousness of sins. But in those sacrifices, there is a reminder of sins year by year. Jesus was offered once as a sin sacrifice. Now, if you think about the Old Testament laws had sacrifices for sin, like we said, and guilt offerings, but they were very specific. You did this one for the sin offering, there's this one for the guilt offering. It was only the burnt offering where the person got to choose what was offered. See, just about anything could be given as a burnt offering. And that burnt offering, though, still was for the atonement of sin. In chapter 13 of Hebrews, starting with verse 10, Hebrews 13, verse 10, "We have an altar from which those who serve the tabernacle have no right to eat. For the bodies of those animals whose blood was brought into the holy place by the high priest as an offering for sin are burnt outside the camp. Therefore Jesus also, that he might sanctify the people through his own blood, suffered outside the gate. So let us go out to him outside the camp, bearing his reproach." Jesus died just like the burnt offerings did. They didn't kill them inside the gates. It was done outside. But his sacrifice was a burnt offering, even though he wasn't burnt. In Ephesians chapter 5, though no fire was involved in Jesus' death, in Ephesians chapter 5, in verse 2, it says, "And walk in love, just as Christ also loved you, and gave himself up for us, an offering and a sacrifice to God as a fragrant aroma." or depending on your translation, as a soothing aroma. Jesus died as a burnt offering. How can we call him a burnt offering when there's no fire involved? Because he gave himself wholly to God, completely. Nothing held back. See, from the foundations of the world, God planned a way to save you and I. We bound ourselves in sin, from which we had no way of coming out. And God gave the ultimate sacrifice on your behalf. In 1 Peter again, I'm going to read a little bit more than what we read before. But 1 Peter chapter 1, and starting again with verse 18. Actually, we'll start with verse 17. If you address as Father the one who impartially judges according to each one's work, conduct yourselves in fear during the time of your stay on earth, knowing that you were not redeemed with perishable things, like silver or gold, from your futile way of life, inherited from your forefathers, but with the precious blood as of a lamb, unblemished and spotless, the blood of Christ. For he was foreknown before the foundation of the world, but has appeared in these last times for the sake of you, who through him are believers in God, who raised him from the dead and gave him glory, so that your faith and hope are in God. How do I know that God planned this from so long ago? We have the prophecies. We have something else. Way back in the days of Abraham, Abraham played out the death of Christ. That wasn't arbitrarily done. No one put big, huge neon signs saying, "See, this is Christ coming in the future." It was a story that people related, puzzled over, couldn't see how this fit in other than to demonstrate Abraham's faith. But it's there to show us that God always planned how this would happen in detail, so that he might offer a sacrifice for you and I, that we might live eternally with him. And so the question for us is, what do we do with Jesus? What do we do with the fact that God's only Son died on our behalf? You could say, well, that's nice, and walk away. But a gift was offered, a salvation. If there's anyone here today who wishes to become a part of Christ, to take advantage of that salvation, there's no better time than right now to put on Christ in the form of baptism. If there's anyone here is a child of God, would like to pray as their brethren on their behalf, why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song that was selected.